Hello, you are listening to Otok. We talk about islands and islanders. I am Bojan First. In case you haven't figured it out yet from Freddy Portale's song Viva Malta, today's guest comes from the heart of the Mediterranean. Godfrey Baudacchino is the president of the International Small Island Studies Association, professor of sociology at the University of Malta, and the outgoing UNESCO co-chair in island studies at the Institute of Island Studies at the University of Prince Edward Island in Canada. Otok Podcast is a way for islanders and island scholars to remain connected to each other despite the times, and it made sense to start this series of interviews with Godfrey. Godfrey and I go way back. He was my graduate studies co-supervisor, and we have plotted and collaborated on several other projects since. But one thing I learned about Godfrey is that he is going to have something to say about anything that has to do with islands. I was interested in his take on the current COVID-19 pandemic, its impact on islands, and the lessons we might be able to learn from all of it. But we started our conversation with the International Small Island Studies Association, an organization he leads at the moment. So, as the president of ICISA, maybe that's a good place to start, and you can let me know what ICISA is, because not all of our listeners, especially those that may be listening on the radio station, will actually know what International Small Island Studies Association is.
Yes, of course, it has nothing to do with that infamous organization that also starts with the same four letters, ICIS. In fact, some individuals have asked us to consider changing the name. I don't think we should. ICISA now is probably the world's longest existing island-based organization, going back to the late 70s, early 80s, when the idea was broached. Its flagship event is a biennial conference, which was meant to be taking place in June this year, but of course, given the circumstances we're living in, I think it was smart and prudent to postpone the event to June 2021. So the association brings together individuals mainly from academic circles, but also policymakers, NGOs, students, and, well, people who are interested in islands. I mean, we get even individuals who are doctors, lawyers, consultants, civil servants, sometimes just people who are residents, sometimes people who are retired from their job. They're interested in finding out more what they can learn about islands from an island's point of view. I think the tagline of ICISA is basically studying islands on their own terms. And people keep asking me over and over again, what does on their own terms mean? And the short answer to that question is, well, let's try to consider islands from an island's point of view for a change, rather than simply consider them from a continental perspective. And this is the great wealth, I think, of the association. It allows us to develop a platform where we realize that there are so many things that we hold in common in spite of our obvious differences. And surprisingly, some of the lessons that work, some of the challenges that are faced by islands may also be the same challenges and may offer the same lessons to other islands, even at the opposite end of the globe.
So where does the membership come from? It truly is international.
The membership comes from, on one hand, people from small islands, particularly small island states and territories, but also from the usual suspects. So you will have British, American, Canadian, Australian, New Zealanders who are studying islands or who have research taking place on islands and who therefore have something to say. on islands. What we need to keep in mind is, of course, that around 10% of the world's population lives on islands. Over a quarter of the membership of the United Nations are island states of some kind, starting from the large ones, Indonesia, Philippines, Japan, United Kingdom, down to the very small ones like Tuvalu and Nauru. And moreover, many continental territories have island units. So the United States, Canada, Greece, Croatia, Indonesia, you know, there are so many places in the world that have components that are islands. So the membership is extremely broad.
And the membership was supposed to meet for its biennial conference in St. John's this year in June. Unfortunately, we had to postpone that conference to the next year, given the circumstances of the global pandemic. Islands have been affected by that pandemic in many ways differently than some other places. How's the situation on Malta? What is happening on your home island?
Well, Bojan, let me start by a general comment about islands and the coronavirus, because in a way we have all become islands now, islands in the strict sense of the word. We're all living in some kind of splendid isolation. We have to make do with the confines of our homes, with social interaction restricted to the people in our homes. So this is an islanding phenomenon, and I don't think we should neglect that, because that has also implications for social life, for the way in which we practice our roles as democratic citizens. All these are being very, very seriously tested in these periods. The way in which islands around the world have also faced up to this virus differs. I know that, for example, places like St. Helena in the middle of the Atlantic, they have suspended their air flights. They don't have a ferry servicing them anymore. So effectively, they have quarantined themselves in an almost, I would say, 100% Loctite fashion, which possibly means that they may avoid the pandemic completely. But of course, this raises questions down the line about whether, what and how they are going to face the fact, you know, that once they reopen their borders, as they will, how will they prepare themselves to face the fact that the rest of the world would have gone through this pandemic and they would have simply avoided it. It's something that they will have to face at some point.
And interestingly, in a place like St. Helena, is they're also quite dependent on that flight for all sorts of things, I believe, some of their food supply as well. How are they dealing with this self-imposed isolation? Do you know?
Necessity is the mother of invention. You'd be surprised how entrepreneurial people are in the face of adversity. I think that even looking at Malta these days, suddenly people are turning to whatever fields they have. They're trying to grow their own crops. People are looking to buy homegrown produce. Also in the fact that, although at the moment supermarket shelves are relatively well stocked, it may be a question of time before that supply of food and other items starts whittling down. So definitely one of the responses that people have adopted is to fall back on self-sufficiency, trying to use as many local resources as possible, because the lines of connectivity with the rest of the world are either imperiled or completely shut down, as in the case of St. Helena.
Mm-hmm. And interestingly, we are now going to be forced to address some of the issues that islands have been wrestling with for quite some time, like food security, for example.
Agreed. And this is a wake-up call to remind us that we are all islands in these days. The aphorism, no man is an island, is now transformed and turned on its head in a way by saying that every man and every woman is an island. This is the day and age. It's such a surprising and discomforting thought, especially at a time when we're all so very full of ourselves as having reached the technological age. We now find ourselves so desperately physically isolated, even though, as a saving grace, I must say, many of us do have access to the internet. So it's a very special type of isolation. Otherwise, wouldn't be able to entertain such conversations as we are having now.
Yeah, absolutely. And interestingly enough, I always think of islands as not just People always think of islands as isolated places, but I always see them in many ways very connected places, in ways that mainlands don't necessarily have to think about their connectedness. I wonder if this kind of physical isolation has impacts on islands that are quite different than psychological impacts on islanders that are quite different from the people who live on the mainlands.
Yes, I think you've put your finger on a very important topic. Early on in the island studies literature, there have already been distinctions made between so-called cosmopolitan islands, islands that are hubs, islands that are extremely well connected, islands that have a cosmopolitan workforce and citizenry, as against those that are much more marginalized, located in further regions, further away from centers of habitation and economic activity. And of course, they face different problems. So the continental islands, the cosmopolitan islands, are more likely to suffer overpopulation, high density of traffic, high density of mobility, with its own concomitant problems, as against those on the periphery, which are more likely to face the threat of depopulation, for example. So while some islands face problems having to do with excess waste, excess traffic, excess air pollution, others are facing the very real prospects of having to shut down their local school, having to shut down their local grocery store.
Exactly. And Malta is interesting because it is in some ways both. It sits on the periphery of the European Union, but it is in this nexus of financial services, of tourism. What's happening on your home island?
Yes, Bojan, you know your geography quite well. Malta sits at the southern edge of the European Union. It's practically in the middle of the Mediterranean Sea, with Sicily and Italy to its north, Tunisia to its west, Greece to its east, and Libya to its south. So it's a very turbulent zone. It's also a zone that has seen thousands of undocumented migrants crossing from North Africa into Southern Europe, looking for a new life. And this is another problem that this part of the world faces. At the moment, of course, it's the virus that has taken on as the main topic of conversation and of public policy. The economy does depend on tourism. It does depend on finance as well, but it also depends on other sectors. Construction is very strong. Electronic gaming is very strong. Manufacturing is very strong. So while some sectors have gone down, in fact, you know, when you look at hospitality and catering, for example, it's almost down to zero. At the same time, other sectors are still holding on. The electronic gaming sector, for example, it has been hardly affected. It seems that people are still playing bets, if not on sports, because many sports activities have shut down. They're playing bets on card games, on casino games. So the betting disposition is ensuring that this industry continues to survive very well.
That is fascinating. I did not know about...
Yes, it's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, I did not know about the electronic gaming sector in Malta.
There are 12,000 jobs in Malta based on electronic gaming. So that's almost 15% of GDP, in fact. It's almost as strong as tourism, imagine. So it's a very important sector. The other sector that has also kind of discovered a new lease of life is online tuition. So the university, the vocational college, various other colleges, especially private colleges, have basically transformed themselves almost overnight into online platforms of learning. We are now delivering all our courses online. Students are submitting their assignments online and so on. This has been a very welcome breath of fresh air, I think, to education, because there has been a very strong hesitation to the adoption of blended learning. Now, suddenly, it's become mainstream. And this is something that will not go away once the pandemic is over.
Absolutely. I was going to ask you, so the education sector is adapting to the pandemic by going online. I'm sure that that's much harder, of course, to do for tourism sector and for financial sector. Is Maltese government and is European Union looking specifically to provide some sort of relief, some sort of measures to those sectors that are disproportionately affected by the pandemic?
Well, what we have seen so far is that the European Union, apart from offering a substantial amount of money to shore up struggling economies, the main act, I think, the main policy act that has happened so far is to allow state aid to be practiced once more amongst European member states. So, as you might know, and as the readers might know, one of the practices that the European Union has very strongly defended in the interests of competitiveness is not to allow states to shore up their economies or their flagship industries, you know, like airlines, for example. So this kind of provision has now been shelved, which therefore means that any member state, and this is something that has been taken up practically by most member states, they are in a position to start bailing out their own industries in ways that are not affected by European Union laws. In Malta specifically, we have government so far has come up with three packages, one after the other, one stronger than the other. At this point in time, it is subsidizing the salaries of approximately 60,000 employees. That's one fourth of the labor force. It also reached an agreement with employers. So employers are also forking out a fraction of salaries to their employees. The whole point is to prevent redundancies, Bojan, because as we know, these kinds of pandemics, they go through, you know, they go through a certain epoch. And then once they've burned themselves out, it's time for the economy to get back on track. And you don't want to miss out on the ability to retain and return to your competitive edge if your employees have left you. So one of the key policy measures is to try to prevent mass redundancies. If you have employees who are skilled and capable and experienced in the work, you need to hold on to those people. You weather the storm. And once the storm is over, you need to be in a position to recover as quickly as possible. So those are the thrusts of the measures being pursued by the Maltese government so far. It is not to be excluded that other measures will come on steam, especially if this pandemic continues to rage for longer than one is expecting.
Exactly. And it's probably too soon to talk about the lessons that we are learning from this, but it is obvious that some of the things that we take for granted, for example, national airlines that have largely been privatized around the world, are becoming an essential service that we will have to figure out what to do with, given that, you know, most of them are grounding their flights around the world. What other sectors do you think there is a possibility that we can rethink how we approach these things on islands? And islands, again, are beautiful places to experiment on, for better or for worse.
That's a very good question. I certainly agree that it may be premature to come up with any definite conclusions, but there are already signs which one can read and interpret. Airlines definitely have come up back with a vengeance. National airlines, national means of transportation, including ferry services, have become very important to transport goods and medicinal supplies to affected communities. There is also supermarkets, of course, have become very important centers to facilitate weathering through such storms. Another important sector could be education as well. As I said, the transition to online learning is a very important aspect. However, also the state itself, Bojan, I mean, we seem to have gone through a period where the powers and the role of the state has been diminished through liberalization, through globalization, the elimination of protectionism and so on. It seems that the state has come back with a bang. The powers of the state, not just to administer and to cope with a crisis, but even to surveillance the populace, to make sure that people are obeying regulations and so on. I mean, it seems strange, but in a way, I think it's true. Democracy gives us freedom, but if it's freedom to run around and spread the virus, then it may be a human right that needs to be curtailed, at least temporarily. So this is where absolutist governments like China, in a way, have shown that they are better placed to handle crises like this one rather than democracies. I know it's a very provocative statement, and it will need to be reflected upon carefully. So what is the balance that needs to be achieved between human rights and freedoms on one hand and collective public health and security on the other.
And that's something that many states are starting to wrestle with, because it's becoming obvious that voluntary measures may not be enough.
Correct. Our superintendent of public health, who is she's talking at media events every day, updating the public on the number of cases that have been tested as positive and so on. She is all the time admonishing people for not bothering with, you know, with taking the precautions that she is advising. And if people continue to, by and large, avoid the self-quarantine measures that she is encouraging, then it's quite possible that the state may have to take extraordinary measures and start imposing these kinds of events.
I was going to ask you, as sort of one of my last questions, how are Maltese coping with this?
There have been various expressions of solidarity, especially with people working in the health sector. We have had people sharing posters hung on windows and on garage doors. I have one right in front of me right now. Our neighbor has a poster with a rainbow and a heart saying basically, stay safe. We are in this together. Hold on. You know, we'll fight this. We'll win this. So the efforts to remain sane, the efforts to also introduce a sense of humor, perhaps, songs have been adapted to address the coronavirus pandemic. This DJs have set up impromptu parties in their balconies. So, yeah, I mean, even TV programs, you know, they don't just deal with the somber side of things. But, yeah, there is also a touch of humor and a touch of lightness that is very much appreciated in this day and age.
Excellent. And personally, if that's not too intrusive, how are you coping with all of this?
Oh, my gosh, I'm having too many meetings and I'm sitting down at my chair looking at the laptop for too long. So one of the things I'm doing is early in the morning, when it is relatively safer to leave the house, I'm actually going out on a you know, half an hour walk and jog. It helps me to put the rest of the day in perspective, and it helps me to burn away some of the calories that are invariably piling up.
Yes, I think that's going to be an issue around the world. Anything I should have asked and I didn't?
Oh, I'm not sure. Of course, the economy is going to take a nosedive. We are already bracing ourselves for a 10 to 12% reduction in GDP this year. This is the current estimate. But like with other events and crises, I'm sure we will rebound. We will get back. We don't know exactly what we will get back to. I mean, earlier, we spoke about airlines, we spoke about education. One of the things we didn't speak about is traffic, for example. The amount of air pollution in the air has been halved in the last 2 weeks. And mobility possibly may be transformed the longer we spend in lockdown. I think we may wake up one day to a day when people will think twice about using their car to go to work, for example.
That's really interesting, because I'm for one of the episodes, maybe a little bit down the road, I really want to kind of talk to several people about the connection between the climate change, which has taken, and climate crisis, which has taken the back seat to the current pandemic for obvious reasons. But there is an obvious connection between what is happening now during the pandemic and the impacts it's showing that we can have on climate crisis as well.
Definitely. I think one of the great virtues of 2020 will be a reduction of carbon particles in the air.
Yeah. Oddly enough, right?
Oddly enough.
Thank you so much for your time.
And thank you for this engaging conversation. Stay safe and wash your hands.
Exactly. I was going to say the same thing. And I hope that soon we talk about other island teams that are just as interesting as the Islanders' response to COVID-19.
Yes, looking forward to that.
Thank you. That was Godfrey Baldacchino, professor of sociology at the University of Malta, president of the International Small Island Studies Association, and the outgoing UNESCO co-chair in island studies. I'm going to leave you with a bit of Maltese hip-hop, courtesy of Huli. Wash your hands, stay safe, stay home, and listen to one. Kizmin, li konna nkunu flim kien intu jien, nħabtuna ħarbu l-ħabbati tal-bibin, min jaf kemajtu ma naqil-ġirin, sewċ li riballun nilabu biħ fejn ikun, fxis aqtarraħal mux bħallun, nintaqaw xit li ta' kuljum, bli rakini kollu kitta pini ma jieħta z-zarbun, min emma d-dar, għalbim bombam, kartun subbonolis flim kien ma wan, it-fall ta' mpari kulħat jaraħ, it-toro sa' kienu jkunu baħ, wara n-noli jaw ħarba, Jawal aktar posti jedim warba Jaw nilabu l-bocci jaw bil-caps Inkella xieġirja bil-BMX Tfulija tal-ġen niġri lawnu lem Bħal zenigata warra l-Lupen Kem nishtiqna t-GD Unerġa nejx tfuliti Garba wijet għallin gawdi Mimmetan kun zaj Għax il-ħin it-tijr Wizmin jaddi malaj Tamil xada dak L-istaj tamil tillu Minna zmin ma kien jott Wad li bdejna nitfarfru bil-mod Filli niftemu bil-telefon U filli tajniħa 3310 Mal-grupp, habiba, jew habib Niltaqaw il-bild gdej tal-ħalib Il-ġimma u s-sib tarana emzgur Baxa liri fil-boot xossok senjur Il-xufir tal-linja raġel fuq l-irġil Bixdax il-ċentezmu għal-paċe fil Il-ħat wara n-nofsi naru għaffat Ġawa l-aeroport jiltaqa kull-ħat Zaza kull-im kiem min Malta kolla L-awwal in-imlew il-post b'dik il-folla Im-ħat ribejn il-ġuventur min jabbi l-awwal fajla Flasha n-nofsa d-dara l-Uberto Smajla Darba wijet għallin gawdi Mimmetan kun zaj Il-ħin it-tijr Wizmin jaddi malaj Tamil xada dak L-istaj tamil tillum Erġa mill l-istess Jek ħada terġa tqum Izmin fuq jaddej U jek saħti tibda tħallini Niftakar kem gawdejt U għalek mandu xi dispjaċini Ħaj ja wahda għandu maħlejtix Opportunita ma nitlifix Ma nejx biex naħdem għat ma nkun skjaf ta' xol Naħdem biex nejx irritin gawdu kol Bek jen ma ħajti Għamilt kontrat li jek jista' jkun ingawdi mit nejx sal-ħar Dan huwa fatt u min jafni jista' jgħid Li jien dik il-persuna li le qatt ma ngħid Biex noroġ mid-dar dejjem insib skuża Tgawdija għalija ħaġa mera fil-juża Tinsix il-birra storja għadha misteru Meta tara li x'imkien trid tgħid li l-veru Darba wieħed qalin gawdi minn meta nkun sajr Għax il-ħin itir Wizmin jaddi malajr Tagħmel x'għadha dak L-istaj tagħmel tillum Erġa' mill-istess Jekk ħadha terġa' tqum Jekk nerġa' Darba wieħed qalin gawdi Minn meta nkun sajr Għax il-ħin itir Wizmin jaddi malajr Tagħmel x'għadha dak L-istaj tagħmel tillum Erġa' mill-istess Jekk ħadha terġa' tqum Darba wieħed qalin gawdi Minn meta nkun sajr Għax il-ħin itir Wizmin jaddi malajr